talking about antinomianism. Now everyone remember? So that's a fancy word for what Christians believe. Pauline theology is that a person no longer has to fulfill the commandments of the Old Testament according to the Apostle Paul, because Jesus was the ultimate sacrifice, and through his crucifixion he atoned for the need, for he absolved the need for observance of the physical commandments. And there was a big dispute within the early church whether Christianity should be antinomian or whether it should emphasize a performance of mitzvot. There was a big machlokes between Peter and Paul over this very point. Paul eventually prevails, and he's able to persuade Peter, who would eventually become the first pope of Rome, that Christianity is indeed antinomian by nature, and that one does not have to fulfill the commandments. And it seems like Rabbi Yehuda Halevi completely ignores Pauline doctrine, and he just talks about Christianity in terms of the history of the story of what Christianity is based upon. He talks about supersessionism in his discussion of Christianity, where he says that the Jewish people used to be the chosen people, but then they were replaced, they were superseded by the apostles and all of the students of the apostles. And he talks about the need for Christians to proselytize, to spread the religion to the rest of the world, because that's what Christianity promotes. And as we'll see, that's what Islam promotes as well. And then in his final paragraph, in paragraph 10 on page 61, he says, "Our laws and statutes emanate from the commandments of Simon the Apostle, as well as from statutes in the Torah which we study." So he seems to be ignoring the Apostle Paul, who says that we don't really have that many laws. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is willing to concede that Simon the Apostle is the one that is really the main guy. Who's Simon? That's Simon Peter. Really, his real name, the name of the apostle is really Simon. The word Peter, Petros, in Latin or Greek, Greek, is rock. He was known as Simon the Rock, and that's how he became known as Simon Peter. And the reason why he was known as the Rock is a long story, which we'll talk about another time. But he was locked away in a basilica, in this St. Peter's Basilica. You've heard of that in Rome? That's because he was supposedly secluded in there at the end of his life in this rock dome or tower, and he became known as Peter. But in any event, we do subscribe to the laws of the Torah. We study the laws of the Torah. We believe in the laws of the Torah. There is no doubt as to its veracity and its divinity. It thus states in our New Testament, in the name of the Messiah, "I have not come to negate any of the commandments given to the children of Israel and their prophet Moses. I have rather come to add strength and fortitude to them." And of course, this is based upon a passage from Matthew, which was ascribed to Jesus himself. And he says, "I've not come to take anything away, I've only come to add to the laws of the Old Testament." So the question is, why does Rabbi Yehuda Halevi sort of just brush away the greatest attack that we could make upon Christianity, which is that it's completely dispensed with any sense of mitzvot? That was the question that we left with. Any ideas where Rabbi Yehuda Halevi leaves us with the impression that Christians have mitzvahs also? So that's our dilemma, and the only suggestion that I have, I don't know whether this is the correct answer or not. There could be a number of different answers. It could be that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi was living in a particularly Catholic ritual-drenched society, or at least he knew of that society. He was really in an Islamic land, but just north of him was a very, very ritualized kind of Christianity, and perhaps that's the reason why he didn't feel he could pull the antinomian card. But it could also be because he's already dismissed the philosopher. And the philosopher is the one who says it really doesn't matter what you do in life as long as you have the proper thoughts. And he wants to differentiate the Christian from the philosopher, because at least the Christian has the advantage of basing his beliefs upon Torah. But But as we'll see, the area that the Christian falls short in, you know, he could have chosen to say, well, you're no different from the philosopher, because I had a dream where an angel came to me in a dream and told me that what I do counts. And there is a specific set of desired behavior that the Creator expects of me to do. And if you just tell me that we don't have to do anything because Jesus absolved me, then you're no better than the philosopher. He could have said that. But he's going to take a totally different approach. He's building upon the dismissal that he already made of the philosopher, that there has to be within religion a specific set of behaviors that are inherently desirable because they have some innate quality to them. So I'm willing to concede that Christianity holds that for me. But I'm going to take a totally different approach, which is the argument of irrationality. So whereas on the one hand, philosophy is completely rational, but at the same time, it's completely antinomian by nature, meaning that there's nothing required of me to do in my life, there's a contrast that a lady is creating by talking about now religion, which may require me to do certain things in my life, even if I concede that Christianity does have its own set of rituals. But nevertheless, it lacks the rationality. It lacks the logic of the preachings or the ideologies of the philosophy. So that's where I just think that we're headed. I just wanted to just sort of set that up for you so that we understand where we're going now, because now that we've seen the arguments of the Christian cleric, we're going to demolish them. We're going to knock them down. And it's in just a couple of paragraphs where the Yehuda Levi is going to explain why he finds Christianity to be completely unsatisfying. So we're just going to read a couple paragraphs today because it's already late and I have this a little bit more extensive Dvar Torah for Parshas B'Shalach today. So if we can get a reader to read from the big number 5 on the page 61. And I've been asked that if we can get a reader, the reader should come like a little bit closer to the camera so that the mic and the camera will... You don't have to go on camera, just that the mic and the camera should be able to pick up your voice for the thousands upon thousands of people who will be watching this. Yeah. So who do...
Okay,
great, perfect. Great, thank you. No, you're good.
I think I'm close enough.
You are close, yeah.
The Kuzari said to the Christian, logic plays no part in your argument. If anything, logic dictates the exact opposite. When it comes to things illogical, the only way a person will be convinced that reality is different is by seeing something firsthand. When a person sees something with his own eyes, he has no choice but to fully accept the phenomenon as true, despite its illogic. The individual is then forced to reconcile the logic of the case with what he saw, and to gradually work out some logical explanation for the phenomenon. A good example of this is found among the empirical scientists. They develop their theories in conformity with logic and also dismiss various phenomena as being logically impossible. But if you demonstrate to them empirically that something they had previously dismissed actually exists, they are forced to revise their theories and find a way to explain the new phenomenon based on the stars or other spiritual forces, because ultimately you cannot deny your eyes.
Right. This is a very important paragraph, because not only is Rabbi Yehuda Halevi putting forth his rejection of Christianity with this paragraph, but he's also setting us up for any kind of, if we perceive any kind of illogic to the Jewish tradition, we would have to say that the illogic is only prima facie, is only at first glance do we detect an illogic, because if there was something that was manifest to the Jewish people en masse, then no matter how illogical it might seem, we would still have to accept it. So for example, if someone were to come to you and say that I heard the voice of the divine being bellowing out from atop of a mountain and telling me what he wanted me to do, from a philosophical perspective, that's totally illogical. There's no rational reason why anyone would believe me as an individual telling them that, because they weren't there. They didn't see it. They didn't hear it by themselves. And to think that God would have manifest himself to you and to tell you one specific thing that he wants you to do defies logic. It doesn't seem reasonable. It doesn't seem rational. But if the person sees it with their own eyes, if they were actually witness to that, and there were millions of people that were witness to it, and they pass it on to their children, then despite the irrationality of that experience, you can't deny what you've experienced firsthand. Your senses for Rabbi Yehuda Halevi are therefore more true and more reliable than your mind. Your mind plays tricks on you, but your eyes and your ears do not play the same tricks. Now, of course, we know that the eyes can also play tricks on you. Your eyes play tricks on you all the time. That's what an optical illusion is. But they're far more reliable than the mind is. And that's why he says, you know, he says that scientists of our day, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is talking in the medieval period, develop a theory, a hypothesis, and this whole concept of trying to prove the hypothesis in the laboratory did not, or what we would call modern scientific method, did not become a requirement of scientists until many, many centuries later. Aristotle didn't have a lab in order to test his theories about cosmology. He developed a theory of cosmology, and it was accepted fact because it was logically sound. So therefore, if man perceives that there are concentric, transparent spheres that revolve around the Earth at varying velocities, at different speeds and at different directions, and that's why we see stars orbiting our planet, we don't have to prove it by sending a rocket ship up into space. As long as the math seems sound, and as long as it's logically sound, so then it becomes scientific fact. The only time when something has to be proved in the laboratory is only when the scientific method becomes much more formalized, and that won't happen for many centuries from now. But he says that even the scientists of my day, if they develop a theory and they establish it as scientific fact, and then all of a sudden something comes along that nature proves them wrong, they'll have no choice. They'll have to say, despite the logic of what I thought was scientifically accurate, there's new scientific data that has proven me to be wrong. If I thought, for example, that there's a transparent sphere that's impenetrable, that surrounds our planet, and then we're able to send a satellite higher than the sphere I thought that was the ceiling of the sky, then I have to redesign my theory and modify my theory to allow for there's no sphere out there, but rather the stars are independently moving in a certain kind of orbit based upon some other scientific explanation. Because ultimately, he says, you cannot deny your eyes. You cannot deny the empirical data that is presented to you. And so what you're telling me, you, the Christian, is totally illogical. That's where we're going. But it's paragraph number 3.
In your case, however, you have not shown me any physical evidence to substantiate your beliefs. Furthermore, what you suggest is totally foreign to me. I was not raised with these ideas. Therefore, I need to search more thoroughly until I find the truth.
So you have failed me in 2 areas, says the Christian. Number 1, what you're telling me is illogical, that there should be a virgin birth, that there should be this one man who is really God but in human form. That God should be able to assume a human form and be born from a woman, and that he should be a trinity but a unity at the same time. All of these things defy and transcend logic. And he says, I'm not saying that it can't be true. I'm just saying that my mind tells me that it doesn't make any sense. And the only way that you can convince me that what you're saying is true is if you could provide me with hard physical evidence that what happened really happened. In other words, I would, if I was in the manger, if I was in that barn where Yashki was born, and you were able to demonstrate to me that genetically, Mary conceived him by immaculate conception instead of through Joseph, okay, fine, if you can prove that to me, fine, I would accept it. But you haven't proven it to me. As a matter of fact, there was really no one that was witness to this immaculate conception. It's not something that is provable to begin with. And therefore, it's not something that I can accept based on just faith. I can accept things on faith if they're logical. I can't accept things on faith if they don't make any sense. So first of all, what you told me just doesn't make any sense. It's not rational. It's not logical. And you haven't shown me any proof to dispel the illogic of what you've told me. And finally, he says, I was not raised with these ideas. And if I wasn't raised with these ideas, it only makes it further, even more difficult for me to accept what you're trying to foist upon me, because it's just so out there, it's so foreign. And as we know, Christianity is really a hybrid of biblical concepts, of Judaic concepts, synthesized together with certain Roman mythological and pagan concepts of, such as virgin birth, and such as God assuming the form of man, and so forth. So, I'm a Khazar. I'm not into Roman mythology. I'm not into biblical concepts. And so, really, if you're going to convince me, you're going to have to do a little bit better than that. So that's where the Khazar king, King Bulan, rejects the Christian. And again, I think it's worth emphasizing that this is not an exhaustive polemic against Christianity. And how many pages did we spend on trying to describe Christianity? We started on bottom of page 58, and we're only on page 62. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, his main agenda is not to prove that Christianity is not the right faith. He really just is building up to, he's getting us to a certain point in the story where we arrive at Judaism. Number one, we've seen the philosopher and we've seen the Christian. So far we've seen that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi can't accept the philosopher because he doesn't promote any specific set of behaviors that are intrinsically valuable. He's rejected Christianity because Christianity does not offer any empirical proof to the illogic of its preachings, of its doctrines and its ideologies. We're all headed towards Judaism. So Judaism is going to have something that is inherently valuable in its behaviors, and it's going to have to offer empirical proof to the seemingly illogical aspects of what our tradition states, such as Maimon Har Sinai, such as Revelation on Mount Sinai. The third piece of this puzzle, before we get to the Jewish cleric, will be the Muslim, and that's something that we'll examine next week.